You're listening to Morning Edition on Red River Radio. Commentator Gary Joyner is with us again, and this time with an economic history lesson from the founding of our nation to the present.
Today we're going to talk about panic and depression, but don't worry. This is certainly not a commentary on the history of mental health, but rather economic health. The economic health of our nation. During the 19th century, sudden economic downturns, which we would later call depressions and recessions, were called panics. These panics proved that boom and bust periods of the business cycle were, perhaps, not predictable, but inevitable. The first panic acknowledged by historians and economists occurred in this country in 1819. It marked the end of the economic cycle created by the War of 1812 and featured, just as you might expect, bank and financial failures and downturns in manufacturing and agriculture, which created unemployment. With the Panic of 1837, banks quit paying in gold and silver and went to paper currency. When banks stopped paying in specie, which we now call hard currency, there was an immediate shortage of gold and silver. Louisiana found that, even as one of the richest states in the nation thanks to the demand for cotton and sugarcane, that it had trouble paying its debts, both to its own citizens and out-of-state creditors. This panic led to a 5-year depression. Possibly the best-known panic in the 19th century was the Panic of 1873, which came during the period between the Civil War and the beginning of the Gilded Age. In the South, this was also during Reconstruction, when the U.S. Army was called the Army of Observation by the Northerners and the Army of Occupation by many Southerners. Maintaining this army was very expensive, and the economic concerns of government during this panic were instrumental in the decision to remove the army from the South. A long depression ensued. Ironically, in spite of the tremendous financial instability, this panic coincided with one of the greatest spurts of industrialization in the history of the world, the era of the robber barons, railroad, and steel moguls. Because of this offsetting economic boom for the wealthy, the government took a hands-off stance as the economic status of the very fortunate increased exponentially. A backlash resulted, giving rise to things like the Sherman Antitrust Act and Teddy Roosevelt's fame as a trust buster. Any major war leaves in its aftermath economic upheaval because manufacturing, banking, and government resources during wartime are directed toward the prosecution of the war and war production. When the economy is retooled for civilian purposes, much less is needed, and people who are producing the commodities for war lose their jobs. World War I was the greatest war in the history of the world up until that time, and in the defeated countries, this was exacerbated to the point of economic collapse. The triumphant countries entered into a recession. Again, the U.S. government did little, trying to let the free market economy revamp. The result was tremendous speculation within the stock market, the creation of giant fortunes, at least on paper, and almost universal optimism that there would never be another war, that the business cycle and the success that it brought would continue and that everybody would eventually be wealthy. When the stock bubble burst in October of 1929, the collapse was so complete that the world entered into the Great Depression. This depression had such a devastating impact on this country that government realized, instead of a hands-off policy, it needed to become involved on a monumental scale. Giant work projects were created to give people jobs. The Tennessee Valley Authority brought electricity to rural areas, and the Civilian Conservation Corps built levees along the Mississippi to prevent future flooding. These projects gave people not only jobs, but hope. They helped the nation turn the corner, both economically and emotionally. Since the Great Depression, the U.S. has experienced several recessions, but nothing on the scale seen in the 19th century and the early 20th century, and that's a good thing. Historians and economists have learned from history, and because of it, we now know on an economic plane that history matters.
Commentator Gary Joyner is an associate professor of history at LSU Shreveport, and he comes our way every Tuesday morning at 7:35 here on Red River Radio.